Welcome to Above the Noise, a podcast at the intersection of faith, race, and reconciliation. And I'm your host, Grant Lee Martelli. This episode is one of the most personal to date. Our guest is Danielle Fontaine, a mother, an artist, an author, and philanthropist, who has found a way through her drawings and pictures to tell a very personal story. She has compiled this story in a book called Still Time on Paipan. The story is about her experience and her family's experience in dealing with racism from my daughter-in-law's grandfather when she chose to marry our son Ryan. Murray is white and Ryan is black. This is a two-part episode because the story cannot fit into 30 minutes. It is a mother sharing through her art the struggle of coming to grips with the reality that her daughter and our son were being rejected and not welcomed at Pie Pond. You will receive information about how to purchase the book and where it's available throughout the episode, but let's get into the story. My guest is a very special guest. Her name is Danielle Fontaine, and she's an artist, a mom, an author, a philanthropist. But more than that, she's also the mother-in-law to my son, and we're related by family because we now have some of the same grandchildren. So this is more than just an interview with some person who I know. This is actually the first in a series of family interviews. So welcome, Danielle.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So let's begin with just a little bit of your history, where you were born, how you were raised, you know, those early lives, where you went to college.
I was born in a tiny little village in the province of Quebec in Canada. Population there when I was born was about 2,000 people, so very, very small village. My father was the local doctor, and he was also the mayor of that little village. That place now only has about 900 people living there, so it has never become a boom town. I went there until I lived there until the end of my first grade, and then we moved to the south shore of Montreal. At that point, my father had decided to leave general practice and become a company doctor, so he was the company doctor for Bell Canada. And did that for a long time, and then became the medical director for a pharmaceutical company after that. But that's what brought us to Montreal. He worked in Montreal, but we lived on the South Shore, very, very entirely French-Canadian, entirely, totally white place.
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
I am the second of four. So I have an older sister who's also a doctor, and I have a younger brother who studied engineering, and a younger sister who studied business.
And you studied architecture, is that correct?
I studied architecture. I fell in love with architecture, I think, when I was about in third grade, and the Montreal World's Fair happened, Expo 67 in Montreal, on the islands between the South Shore and Montreal, and the pavilions were so fantastic to me, and I really fell in love with that aspect of art, the built aspect of art, architecture.
Yeah, we visited Montreal some time back, and the kids were younger then. But I remember great architecture, lots of historic buildings, a beautiful city to walk around in. And we went on a tour, I think, downtown, and they were telling us that some of the buildings, you're not even allowed to modify those buildings. Now they're historic and mm-hmm. architecture prevails. You can modify the internal, but externally, everything has to go through a committee to preserve the architecture and the history.
Yes, it's the same out here in Greenville, South Carolina, where I live right now. I'm on the design review board. And yes, we protect our old buildings here too, just like they did in Montreal way back then.
So you met your husband is Bill. And where did you guys meet?
We met on the Queen Elizabeth II, actually, on the ship. We were both selected for a Rhodes Scholarship in 1981. And at that time, the Rhodes Scholars from Canada and the United States would all meet for an evening in New York, a dinner, and then we would board the Queen Elizabeth II and sail over to England, then on to Oxford for 2 years to study there. Interesting fact. So Bill and I basically met that very first night on the ship, and things clicked right away. We've pretty much been together since that first night. One interesting little anecdote was that it was the last time that the QE2 was used to bring the Rhodes Scholars to England, because that very first year that we were there, there was the Falklands War, and the ship was requisitioned to transport troops. So the QE2 became a military ship for the duration of the war. After that, it came back, got totally refurbished, refitted for cruising, but its schedule completely changed where they could no longer, the dates didn't work to ferry the scholars. So we were on that very last bit of tradition from the Rhodes Scholarship.
How long did it take you to get to England from?
Oh, it was 5 or 6 days, I think.
So you got married and then he was in the Air Force, so... I guess you've been in the United States since then?
Yes. My plan really was to go to Oxford for 2 years and then come back to Canada. I could not study architecture at Oxford because they don't have an architecture program. So I left that behind for a little bit, studied economics and politics, and thought I would go back to Canada and pick up architecture again then. But instead, I found myself in the desert of Arizona at a U.S. Air Force pilot training base. So my plans changed. I did work in construction management for that first few months of pilot training. But then, as you know from Ryan, your son, also having been in pilot training, it's just a few months here for preliminary training, and then a few months there for upgrade training. So very soon with the Air Force, we started moving around, made it very difficult to establish a career in the construction or architecture field.
When did you become interested in art?
In art, as in, I've always been interested in art as appreciating art, but as far as making art for myself outside of architecture, the type of art I'm making now, visual art, that happened only 6 years ago here in Greenville. And it's not something that was planned at all. It was quite serendipitous. And I had, if we talk about art, we can include writing, literature. I had been interested in that earlier. I had gotten about 7 or 8 years ago by now, my MFA in creative writing. I thought I might pursue that. I have a writing project still on the back burner that I need to get back to. But as soon as I finished my MFA is when our kids had all left home, and we decided to leave our family home on the outskirts of Greenville and move downtown to a town home and be in a more urban environment, walk around everywhere, not use the car so much. Bill and I were just walking in the little village of West Greenville. It's just 2 miles down the road from downtown Greenville. We were walking around and encountered an artist studio, and she had a painting in the window that caught our attention. And we walked in, talked to the artist, bought the painting, and she explained to us that it was an encaustic painting, which I'd never heard of.
Neither have I. So maybe you can help us understand what encaustic art is all about.
Well, this great artist, Pat Kilberg, explained to me what encaustic painting is. And it's a very old art form. It's over 2,000 years old. And it's painting with hot wax. And it was rediscovered at the beginning of the last century through archaeological digs in Egypt. They found on sarcophagi portraits of whoever was inside the sarcophagus painted onto the tomb, and they were painted in wax. It's actually, it was a Greek form of art, and even though it was in Egypt, it was back when the Greek were in Egypt, and they would immortalize their dead by painting their portraits like this in hot wax and burying them. And the reason why they last so long is that, and they look still pristine after 2,000 years, is the encaustic is not pure wax. It's wax mixed with damar resin, a resin from a tree, the damar tree, that makes the wax harden much harder and melt at much higher temperatures. So it's a very, very long-lasting medium.
So and the resin makes it more durable.
It makes it very, very durable. And the art of encaustic itself was revived and started being used in studios again. Jasper Johns was the first who made it well-known again as a modern medium of making art.
That is a very interesting form of art, and to many people that may be new. So if you as a listener want to see some of Danielle's artwork, and we'll be highlighting it a number of different times, but her website is daniellefontaineartist.com. And there you can find some examples of her art. And I will I'll give it at the end of the podcast again, but it's Danielle Fontaine, F-O-N-T-A-I-N-E, artist.com. So you published a book that was published in 2021 by Clemson Press called Still Time on Pie Pond, Still Time on Pie Pond, P-Y-E-P-O-N-D. The book is very interesting, and it's interesting to artists because it contains lots of arts and lots of art references and some articles and forwarding and summaries by some pretty professional artists. But it also contains a story that we're going to spend some time, the majority of our time talking about, is a story of a family conflict where we're involved together. Your daughter and my son decided to fall in love with each other. That has created what many people call an interracial marriage, and that has created some conflicts in the family. So maybe we can talk a little bit about Ryan and Marie and in the context of the book, and then what caused you to write the book and tell the story in the book through the art.
Marie and Ryan got married. It was 11 years ago now. And of course, being military families, we're scattered all over creation. And when the wedding happened, families gathered, and we had a beautiful celebration. Unfortunately, Grandpa and Grandma, my husband's parents, were not able to come. We were told too much distance, we're getting too old to travel that far, and they didn't come. And it was only a few months later that I realized that the true reason that they didn't come was because they realized that Ryan was a Black young man, which again, distance being what it is in the military, they had not realized that early on. We kept talking about Ryan, but they hadn't met him yet. And then at some point, somebody shared with them something they saw online, or maybe it's when Marie sent the invitation and, you know, there was Ryan. They realized that he was a Black man, and then it was total silence. They did not say, oh, we don't approve. It's just like, oh, we can't come to the wedding. And it wasn't until months later that I realized this was the reason.
An active audience and reviews are critical to the success of any podcast. So I want to thank you for listening and being a faithful listener. And for those of you who are new for the first time, welcome to Above the Noise. Please leave a review. You can leave a review right in the site where you're listening to this podcast, and it helps to get the word out. It helps to make the podcast known to a wider audience. And if you believe the stories and the information we're sharing here is important and need to be heard by a wider audience, your reviews are critical. So thank you in advance. Some people have been looking into live streaming or video conferencing, whether it's with workmates or teaching, or wanting to share your talents with your music and singing or instrument or teaching classes. Audio quality is really important. And I see many people using the headphones that came with their cell phone and the microphone built into that cell phone and trying to get good quality. You will never get good audio quality out of a cell phone. So call performanceaudio.com and they will help you find the right equipment at reasonable prices, and you'll be amazed at how good you sound. Performanceaudio.com, your one-stop shop for good audio quality equipment at reasonable prices.
Bill, my husband, realized earlier than that, but he didn't make a point of bringing it up. He figured, oh, his dad will come around, you know, he'll meet Ryan, he'll see what a wonderful young man he is, and everything will be fine. Well, it's been 11 years, and Grandpa is still not fine with the idea. He has not even wanted to make the effort to meet Ryan, and we suggested coming to their house with Ryan and Marie, and Grandpa could not bring himself to allow that. There's something very, very, very deep-seated in his upbringing where he is just can't bring himself to accept this situation. So, but again, when we all realized that, Bill had a long conversation with his dad, and there was no budging. Then we went back to the silent mode. It's just something we don't talk about. And unfortunately, Marie and Ryan are off to the sidelines, and that's, it's just the way it is.
You said in your book that when they went to pilot school, it was not very far from Pie Pond. And Pie Pond is where Grandma and Grandpa lives, correct? And that's in, yes. That's in Alabama.
No, it's in Georgia.
It's in Georgia.
And Ryan and Marie, Ryan was in his helicopter lead-in training, I think it was called, in Alabama. It was just not even, I think, 2 hours away. And that's when Marie and Ryan were all happy. Finally, they were close to Grandma and Grandpa. And they're like, yay, we can go visit Grandma and Grandpa. And at that point, they were not aware that Grandpa wasn't okay with the wedding. At that point, I wasn't either. It's at that time when Marie and Ryan said, oh, let's all go visit Grandma and Grandpa, Bill and Danielle, Mom and Dad, you know, you come down from Greenville, we'll come over from Alabama, we'll have a little celebration with the grandparents. And all of a sudden, we're like, we hear from Grandpa, nope, we can't do that. That was the moment when both myself and Marie and Ryan realized that, oh, there's a problem here that we weren't aware of. And that's when Bill decided that, okay, now is the time to take care of this problem. I'll talk to my dad. We'll have a reasonable conversation and things will be fine.
The pilot approach, right?
You have a problem.
You address it, you assess it, you come up with a plan and you execute.
Yes, except it didn't work. Grandpa just has not and will not, as far as we can tell, budge. I mean, my other daughter, Renee, had a long conversation with him last time we visited, tried to reason him again, and there's just, he will not change his mind. But
in your book, you said that that's when they realized that they were not welcomed at Pipon. I think that's how you put it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. When they were in pilot training just across the border in Alabama, and then they realized, oh, no.
Did you remember her reaction or his reaction to that?
You mean Grandpa's reaction?
No, Marie or Ryan's.
I don't remember Ryan so much because I didn't see him face to face. And when we talk, I mostly talk with Marie. And I remember Marie was completely taken aback. She just couldn't understand it. It was just so far out of the way Bill and I raised our children. And my new Bill is, Grandpa's son, but he's on a totally different wavelength as far as that goes. And she just could not understand this. And Marie we lived on Pie Pond for a couple of years when the kids were much younger to get closer to the grandparents, get them to know each other better, the grandparents and the grandkids. And Marie was the one who always enjoyed that little farm the most. She was very happy in that environment. And to be told all of a sudden, you're no longer welcome here. Longer welcome to talk to me, your grandfather. I don't want to meet your husband. Sorry, that's it. And then what so many people have said along the way, especially now that Marie and Ryan have the little babies and, the great-grandchildren of Grandpa, and they keep saying, it's Grandpa's loss. It's his loss. And Marie keeps replying, but no, it's my loss too, because I used to have a grandpa and I don't anymore. Yes. And she misses it. And she's really, really upset at that aspect of grandpa. But she loves her grandpa. She would, if grandpa would say, I'm sorry. I was just, thinking along old ways and please come. I mean, she would be totally happy. She would forgive everything and they'd be right back. She loves her grandpa. And of course, she misses grandma too. And grandma is heartbroken because she would love to see everybody. But it's the situation. That's the way the situation is. But if we go back 11 years or about 10 years ago when that first happened, when we all noticed, Bill tried everything he could try to reason with his dad, and it didn't work. We could have said, hey, if you don't want to see our daughter, too bad, you won't see us either. But, that's so very negative. Bill said, no, we'll keep going and we'll keep talking about it and hopefully it'll change. So we kept
to make sure he does everything in his power to keep the relationship alive.
Yes. To try to, to take the positive road towards change as opposed to creating even more conflict. But the fact is we've kept going back for all these many years and there's no change. So to me, it was very, very, very difficult to go back to Pie Pond. It was very difficult for me to have conversations with someone who would throw my daughter out of the family. So whenever we went to Pie Pond and Grandpa was around and I felt uncomfortable, I would just leave, go outside, walk around the farm and take pictures. And that was my excuse, like, oh, it's not that, I didn't want to be very obvious. I don't want to talk to you. It was just like, oh, I'll go walk around, take pictures.
So you say in the book that on page 7 that I became the silence. When Grandpa came in, I went out.
Yes, that's what I did.
That was your way of dealing with it.
That was my way of dealing with it. I didn't feel like having a conversation with somebody who would not want to have conversation with my whole family. So when he came in, I went out with my camera and took pictures. And that was over many years because we go visit Bill's parents a couple of times a year. They're not too far from us. They're about 4.5 hours from us. Even though I have negative feelings towards that aspect of Grandpa, I still love him as Bill's dad. And of course, I don't want to punish Grandma for how unreasonable her husband is. So we still go see Grandma. So I was in that situation where I go there, even though I'm uncomfortable. So my way of dealing with it was to take pictures. And over time, so many of these pictures came to represent the whole story to me.
Okay. Sorry for interrupting you. I was going to ask you, so what was going through your mind as you were going around the farm, taking these pictures and seeing all of these things? And your initial intention was to avoid that conversation, but now you're outside taking it. I mean, were you angry? Were you emotionally distressed or in how?
No, mostly it's walking around, enjoying the beauty of these old things that are collected. And just the thought that keeps coming through my mind, and even now as I'm talking to you or anytime I talk about this story, is I just can't believe it. I just cannot understand it, how somebody would toss away their granddaughter like that. And I'm like, how? It's just a whole huge impression of disbelief. And it's impossible to process. So I was kind of push it aside and try to find the beauty and other things around there.
Let's talk about the Little Yellow House, because you feature that in a separate section of the book, and that has some family memories, but it also became a part of your exhibit and now the book as well.
Yeah, the Little Yellow House. What happened is... So Bill, my husband, Mary's dad, was in the military for about 10 years. Then we left the military and went and spent 3 years in Montreal. Then Bill got a job in Colorado for a while. We thought, okay, well, why don't we move to Georgia for a little bit? It turns out that on Pie Pond, there's the brick house where Grandma and Grandpa live, and there's that old little yellow house, which is an old sharecropper's house that's been moved around a few times, and eventually it landed on that spot out there. And it was a rental home. Grandpa would lease it out. And so when we moved to Georgia, we decided, well, we could live right there, right on the little farm with the grandparents, and really get to be a close-knit family. So we lived in that house for the 2 years that we lived in South Georgia.
So you were going around the farm, and you're taking pictures, and you come to the yellow house. And according to the book, the yellow house is no longer there anymore.
No. Right after we left, Grandpa leased it out a few more years, but then it had roof issues. Water started intruding in the house. And for a long time, it was starting to have termite issues. Grandpa neglected to fix the roof, didn't treat for termites. And, you know, it may be the house wasn't really worth spending too much maintenance money on. It was over 100 years old and it was on its last legs anyway. Lacking that maintenance, it started falling apart, was no longer fit for habitation. Eventually, Grandpa took out everything that wouldn't burn from the house, bulldozed the house into a burn pit and set fire to it. And the little yellow house where we'd been so happy for a couple of years was no more.
So yeah. The reason I bring these up and I talk about some of the things you write in the book, because it seems to me that going around the grounds of the house, of the farm, and taking pictures, you have some pictures in the house before it was knocked down, and you have some of it in your art. Would you say that you were finding your voice for your pen in pictures and then walking around the farm, which eventually became the impetus for the book?
Yes, absolutely. And especially that little house scene in my art because it seemed to me that it was such a close representation of what was happening in our family. For lack of a little bit of maintenance, what had been a beautiful, happy house for us completely fell apart. And I saw exactly the same thing. For lack of a little understanding and love from grandpa to his granddaughter and her husband, the whole family is falling apart because Marie and Ryan are no longer welcome at the farm, but my other three children and their cousins also are all affected by that. Going to the farm to visit the grandparents when their sister is missing, when their cousin is missing, it's no longer the same. It's like the house being invaded by water and termites. It's falling apart. It's a, for lack of just a little love and understanding, just like for lack of a little maintenance on the house, the whole family falls apart. We keep going to see grandpa and grandma. The children are not as excited at coming anymore. The cousins are not as excited about coming anymore because we don't have the whole happy family unit that we used to have before.
Yeah, that's very interesting parallel that you make, the house and the farm and the family dynamics. You can hear the conclusion of our conversation in our next episode in 2 weeks as Danielle brings us to a compelling conclusion and explains how other pieces of her art help tell the story and her hopes for the future of reconciliation in her family. Danielle's book, Still Time on Python, is available from Clemson Press. Her website is daniellefontaineartist.com. There you can see other pieces of her art and the links to purchase the book as well. You can write her through our email here at abovethenoise24@gmail.com. abovethenoise24@gmail.com. Also follow us on Instagram and Facebook so that you can be kept abreast with the things that are happening at Above the Noise.